And you're listening to your community radio station. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284 AL Haleiwa, K224 CQ Anahola. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we will work together to reach our fun drive goal and give some advice on storing and processing our abundant harvests. But first, we'd like to let you know that this program is made possible by listeners just like you, in partnership with our fine sponsors.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapaa Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo power equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Yes, it's true. We're back in the garden where the beautiful birds are singing.
Yes, the birds are singing, and our favorite bird song is the sound of the telephone ringing bird sound.
Because we are nearing the end of our fall fun drive here at KKCR Kauai Community Radio, and we're doing really well. We're over $40,000, $42,190 have been raised. But we still have quite a ways to go to our $60,000 goal, and this is the penultimate day before the end of the fund drive. We have today and tomorrow. And today is already half gone, so we're gonna set an ambitious goal for our show of $3,000. Now that may seem like a high goal for just an hour long show, and it would be if it took 47 phone calls to amass that $3,000, but we're thinking more of a few people who could pick up the phone and lay down $1,000 or maybe even a little bit more to just jet us toward our goal. We had an angel donor, 6 or 8 months ago when our air conditioner broke down, and Robin and I put out the call that we needed to do an emergency fund raising, and the phone rang and somebody donated $1,000 right there on the spot. So we know you're out there. We appreciate all the support you can lend. And we're looking forward to bringing you the rest of the year and many years to come of great programming here, including In the Garden on the Farm for you plant lovers like us.
Indeed. And we'll start the show as we always do by thanking our lucky stars for all of the people who have already called in to donate, and thanking our lucky stars for those phone calls that are about to come in during our show today. 826-7771 or 826-7774 is the number. Give us a call.
Please do. So here's our celestial session for today. Today's Hawaiian moon phase brought to us by the 2015 Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council Hawaiian Moon Calendar. And this is available online. You can also get printed copies, too. It's a pretty beautiful thing. And one of the great things, I was looking at it with Jonathan Jay, and here comes a call into the station. Right. We're so grateful. But Jonathan and I, who are both fans of the Hawaiian Moon studies, we're appreciating that this particular calendar has the three Anahulu, or the three 10-day Hawaiian weeks, rather than the Gregorian weeks listed out on the calendar. So it's just even visually another way to get your mind into a different space about thinking about our relationship with the moon and with nature.
Sure, and these three phases of the beginning of the moon, the middle of the moon, and the end of that single moon, which takes a full 30 days, it really does give you a little more perspective.
Indeed it does. And today's Hawaiian moon, thanks to that calendar, is Hilo. This is the first moon in the Hawaiian moon month. Pretty cool. Hilo rose over Kauai at 8:01 a.m. this morning. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 1:52 p.m., and she'll set at 7:41 p.m. this evening. 3% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated, so just a real small sliver. New moon was on Monday, and yesterday, according to our friends at the Naval Observatory, there was a 1% crescent moon.
Mm-hmm.
So now, was that visible or not? And we've talked before on the show about the fact that it's pretty complicated whether or not you can actually see that crescent moon based on so many atmospheric, local condition situations and sun flares and all kinds of things that influence it. But I guess the person who calculated the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council calendar figured it probably wasn't visible, and so in tradition that this would be the first moon of a 3% disk that would be denoted as the first moon of the month.
Wow. So a whole new beginning here. We get a whole new... It's a new moon.
Yes. Just like we get a new beginning each time we refund KKCR with your generous donation. So please keep those phones ringing. The Mana'o for Hilo. Hilo means twisted, and it notes the appearance of the thin crescent moon that appears to be twisted that sets shortly after the sun tonight. It is the first phase in the Hawaiian moon month. Hilo was celebrated. Hilo was also the name of a celebrated Hawaiian navigator, and I read that it's thought that this moon acts as a navigator for all the moons to follow.
Hmm.
Just got a little chicken skin just reading that.
Yeah, I got it listening.
Ooh. Planting recommendations? It's not actually a day that's not considered productive for planting. In old Hawaii, that was due to the fact that this was part of the ku kapu that was in force. So back in the time when there were stringent religious observations, there were all kinds of things that people were expected to do. But if we recognize this as an unproductive day for planting, of course we know there's so many other things that we could be doing, including harvesting, which we will talk about in just a little bit later on in the show, or what to do right after you've harvested if the food is not just going directly into your mouth. And the last thing I want to mention is that the Orionid meteor shower is coming up.
Ooh.
And so the Orionid meteors are actually debris left behind from Halley's Comet.
Far out. I didn't know that.
Pretty interesting. The reason it gets the name Orionid, though, is because the source of the place in the sky where most of the meteors originate is kind of where the Orion is at its rising. And so they seem to emanate from the Orion constellation, essentially. So the active period altogether is October 15th, so starting tomorrow through the 25th of October. But the peak night is the night of October 21-22, so that's Wednesday and Thursday of next week. And the day before, Tuesday night, is also supposed to be good. And the best time is going to be right after midnight when the moon has disappeared. It'll be beautiful and hopefully clear in your location to see 15 to 20 meteors an hour, is what they say.
Wow, excellent.
Yeah. So enjoy it.
Very cool. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, today the moon is in Libra, and that's an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants. Tomorrow, the moon will be in, on Thursday, yes, the moon will be in, it'll be in a fruit sign. It'll be more of a fire time, a great time to work with our fruiting plants. And Friday, Saturday, the moon will move into Scorpio, which is a great time to work with our watery plants. And that's a beautiful sign for depth and creativity. Kind of drawing that up right now. And Sunday and Monday and Tuesday, we'll be moving into the Sagittarius moon phase, where we'll be working with our fruiting plants again in that fire sign.
Mm-hmm. Yay, work, work, work. But yeah. Work that we love, it becomes play eventually, doesn't it?
It really does. It really does. One of my favorite things.
When work is entertaining, life is good.
Sure. And you know, what I found to be so entertaining for myself is growing like the most diversity of crops at the different times of year, trying new plants in my garden, into my culinary realms, and, you know, experiencing the plants and learning them. And so I'm going to take a walk into my kitchen garden now and talk about a plant that I just met really about 2 years ago. And I met it actually at Kentaro's. And when you get a nice sashimi plate there at Kentaro's, they give you a shiso leaf, just one. This plant botanically is called Perilla frutescens. And basically what it is Japanese basil. It's in the Lamiaceae family, mint, related to all those basils. And it's got a pleasant cumin flavor. And so traditionally in Japan, it's placed on the sashimi plate and you just take nibbles of it as you eat your delicious sashimi. And it's just fantastic. After learning about it and eating it there, I decided, well, let's try to grow it. We live on an island. We've got lots of fresh fish. Can make my own sushi. I'll have beautiful shiso leaves. Well, little did I know what a can of worms I was opening when I thought that to myself, because this has proven to be actually a very difficult plant for me to grow, and I'm still in awe of whoever grows the beautiful leaves for Kentaro's. I believe is growing them indoor with lights, like some other plants.
Now, is it beyond the germination difficulty? Because I've also had zero germination on any shiso seed that I've ever played with.
Thousands of seeds sown, so few to germinate. So what the best thing that I learned so far was surface sowing is a better call. Mm-hmm. What's odd about all this is that it has become a noxious weed in the eastern United States. It has spread across, you know, like half the states in the eastern U.S., both northeast and southeast.
Wow.
And unfortunately, what happens when plants kind of naturalize, they revert back to a more wild form. And so the Perilla, the essential oils that make it taste good are no longer with that plant in its reverted state.
Right.
And it has become a nuisance for a lot of gardeners there. So it's this crazy mix of me trying really hard to grow it. And I've learned, as with basils, it likes the long season. It likes the sunny, hot summer months much better than in the winter, where I can just barely get them to grow a couple of inches tall and they already start throwing off flowers. Mm-hmm. They're triggered into their flowering mode with the lack of daylight hours. So it's been kind of tricky, but when it grows well in the summer, when you hit that sweet spot, it has big, beautiful leaves, and it is quite delicious. In Korea, it's a slightly different variety that doesn't have quite the same flavor, but they do eat it as a side and just nibble on the leaves as they eat their hot pots. And
the only place I've seen it growing in profusion was in Kelly Ball's community garden project there at KCC mm-hmm. one summer, and he just had a big patch of it.
Yeah. I believe when it gets going, it does really well, but it's one of those, as with most plants that we know, they have their sweet place, and you can tell by looking at them whether they're in their sweet place or not. Try as we may, sometimes we just have them in the wrong place. But they come in an all-green variety, which is traditional, and the traditional name is called beefsteak leaf. But there's also a purple variety, and that's the one I wanted to talk about a little bit, because that's actually has a super red dye, a red coloring that does come out of those leaves. So the steeped as a tea is really nice. You could probably even make some coloring on a garment with them.
Whether you wanted to or not.
Exactly. And traditionally pickled with umeboshi plums in Japan. So another use here would be to make our pickles, you know, cucumber pickles, and turn them red by adding the red shiso leaves.
Cool.
Would be quite beautiful. But a few other ideas for using the shiso besides just on the side of your sashimi plate would be avocado and grapefruit salad with shiso leaves, would be with pork or seafood of any kind, just chiffonade, so you slice, make ribbons of the leaves, as people do with basil. You can make a pesto.
I didn't know you spoke French. That was beautiful.
I'm learning. You can make a pesto. It doesn't taste like Italian pesto, of course, but beautiful to toss as a flavoring. Mm. You can also infuse oils, say sesame oil, a light, not a toasted sesame oil, but a sesame oil with shiso leaves, and infuse the flavor and drizzle that on top of other things. It's also used classically in tempura, just a single leaf is tempura battered and fried. Mm. Totally delicious. Makes a great tea as well. But my favorite, which I can't wait to try, is the shiso mojito, which really just sounds great.
Anything mojito sounds good.
Sure, sure. And so the leaves are used not just in Japanese cooking, but in Laos, Vietnam, and all across Southeast Asia, and Korean cuisine. They use the leaves, the seeds, and the buds. And in particular, in Korean cuisine, the seeds are used, and they're oddly called wild sesame, although they're not related in any way to sesame, actual sesame. But the plant, it's a good symbol of its reproductive capabilities, that a single well-growing plant will make that much seed,
right,
that it can be sprinkled across your whole meal.
I wonder if it's used, so it's used in that, for that reason, that the seed is utilized.
The seed is utilized, and when I did a little more digging on that, it sounds like perilla oil is extremely high in the omega-3 acid known as ALA, or alpha-linoleic acid, and that's superior health quality. So I believe that's probably why the Asians mix this in with their food, although the varieties are slightly different. There it is, shiso. I'm going to keep trying until I have a really successful planting of it and try it out.
And save some seed, because truly these crops that are not well adapted to our subtropical climate are the one, and yet they're highly sought after, the ones in part that we should be working on, you know, growing generation to generation, saving seeds from ones that survive, and then eventually making a Kauai strain of shiso.
Indeed.
Pretty awesome. Want to thank so much our contributors already. A lot of contributions to our show. Calls from Judy, Marshall, Lucy, Nanette, and then Matt called as well, and he said he was just about to plant, but because of the advice he just got in our celestial session, it saved him from planting at maybe an inopportune time, and he's grateful for the instant advice. So please keep the calls coming, everybody. We really appreciate the feedback, and grateful to be giving you some information that's valuable to you. And information that's valuable. So I want to let you know, too, please, our telephone numbers, 826-7771, 826-7774. If you would like to call our toll-free line, it's 866-275-1112. And this is In the Garden on the Farm with your host, Paul and Robin, here until 1 o'clock.
Yes, and I'll remind you, you can also go to kkcr.org and click the Donate tab. And we want you to know that KKCR Radio, if you haven't noticed, our hearts are in it. It's from the heart. We're different than every other radio station on Kauai. Our programmers volunteer our time and talents because we love what we do and because we love our island home, Kauai. Hear the difference on our airways and be a vital part of that difference by pledging your support right now. Give us a call, 826-7771.
And we have set a very ambitious goal of $3,000 for today's show, because we need to catch up to our goal of $60,000 to keep on air this semi-annual part of the year, so please give us a call and get us up there. And so we're going to focus on abundance of all kinds, including phone calls that are coming in right now. And part of the abundance is the incredible yields that can be had with a surprising small number of plants planted of the right variety at the right time of year with the right amount of tending. And suddenly we're met with a huge yield of food, much more than we could ever eat. And we know that perhaps we're going to have some lean times in the garden after all this abundance comes through. So we're thinking about preserving the various aspects of preserving food. And who better but Robin, a master of the kitchen arts, to run us through some of her tips and techniques on preserving the beautiful harvest coming from the garden and farm.
Absolutely. Well, you know, when your plants do really well and you have a huge amount to work with, it goes beyond what I would consider cooking. It's not really cooking anymore. Cooking is like making dinner, but when you have, you know, bushels and crates full of fruits, it's processing at that point. It takes on another whole nother meaning. Although I want to say, before we even talk about storage and keeping for ourselves, when you do have that abundance, and particularly of fruits that don't keep very well and are harder to store or preserve in any way, avocados come to mind right away. Bring them down to the food banks. Yeah. Bring them to the church pantries, you know. Share your abundance first. And we hope that you'll be doing that too right now with your phone calls to KKCR. Share your abundance with us. But, you know, before even thinking about how we want to put these things up and save them for ourselves, let's share with our other community members, our friends, our family. You know, make somebody's day. Give them a beautiful mango when they don't have any of their own.
Indeed. And another beautiful gift is dried mango, too.
Indeed. And so, yeah, I'll go down the steps. And drying is a common preservation technique in the tropics. It's been utilized for a very long time. I know one of my favorite, and I haven't done it yet, but Craig Elovich in his Trees of the Pacific Islands, is that what it's called?
Traditional Trees of the Pacific Islands.
It's a fantastic book. There's multiple varieties of challah in that book that had such large fruits that yielded an actual sweet, yummy paste. And the paste was collected from the challah and dried and rolled up almost like really large fruit leather in leaves and stuff. And drying's a really great way in the tropics. You can make solar dehydrators. In fact, I don't have the website to give out, but I just did a quick Google search of solar dehydrators, and there's full-on workshops to watch on the internet to show you how to make a really functional solar dehydrator that uses absolutely no energy.
And the simplest of that being a dark stone, a rock, and, you know, drying as a preserving method, something not invented by humans, but something observed by humans.
Yes.
That happens underneath a fruit tree when it's in the hot sun. So here in the hot tropical, subtropical sun, there's probably no better way than actually using drying for vegetables and meats as well.
Yeah, fish especially. So lots of different ways, methods for the solar dehydrator. I don't want to get waylaid on that particular topic. But then there's also, you know, plug-in commercial dehydrators like the Excalibur or Sunbeam makes a less expensive one. One of the things that I've been doing that's just the easiest drying I could think of is fruit leather, and essentially I just make a smoothie in the blender and pour it on the dehydrator sheets and spread it out and dry it, and you've got an amazing fruit leather just like that in just a few hours. It actually dries quite quick. Okay. If you're going to slice your fruits, you want to be sure to make uniformly thick or thin slices, because of drying times will vary if you have a lot of different thicknesses, and it just makes the whole process a little more complex and makes you have to babysit it a little bit more.
And too thick, ultimately there's a too thick where the middle doesn't really ever dry out properly. Yeah?
That's right, and there's different stages of dryness with certain fruits. Bananas are a good example. You've had those banana chips that are sliced in rounds that are dried all the way till they're dry and they're crunchy. Or you can cut a banana in half long ways and dry it until it's leathery. Now, I personally prefer the leathery texture and flavor in my mouth, and it also is easier on the teeth and all that kind of stuff.
I actually learned that the banana chips are plantain that have been fried in oil, dried, and then sugar is added.
Oh, huh, how about that? Obviously, in some places, plantains are more abundant than apple bananas. But you know how it is here. Bananas and avocados are kind of like currency of their own kind, and sometimes it gets to the point where you can't even give them away because everybody seems to have them.
Yes.
But drying's really fun. Dried fish is delicious. We could go on and on about different things we can dry and different ways to do it, but there's also, again, lots of videos, YouTubes out there to give you some tips because I want to get through some other methods. And the next one I could talk about is canning and preserving, otherwise known as jamming. And jamming is basically, essentially, it's your fruit, extra sugar, and pectin. If your fruit doesn't have enough pectin, now there's certain fruits that are high in pectin, like apples and even lemon. So you can add those to your mix and not have to substitute sort of an artificial or a store-bought pectin. And you cook it a really long time, really long time till it gets thick. And you want to sterilize your jars and heat seal and all that kind of thing, because what you want is a very clean product. It's actually the opposite of fermentation or pickling, where you want some lactic acid bacteria moving. That's not what you want when you're canning or preserving. Yep. And I know that YPA has given some great classes on fruit preserving, like a whole... there was a whole workshop, there was a whole sort of curriculum system and multi-week preservation classes that were based on that whole jamming. So, again, much more to learn there. That is not my most typical way of preserving things, but I know it's also very effective and certainly make great presents and gifts and easier to give. So this is a way you can have a whole lot of mangoes or a whole lot of roselles or pineapples or whatever it is that you have so much of, and cook it all down and jar it up, and it'll be shelf stable.
Awesome. All right, well, let's turn right now to our good buddy Mac James, who's here with us each and every week on the show, and he's going to give you a thought about our fun drive and inspire you. Mac, I don't even know what microphone you're on here.
One. Aloha Kauaine. Yeah. I just have a little statement here. It's about KKCR volunteers. Are we there?
No, he's not.
Pot him up.
All right, then. It's all the way.
Oh.
Buttons. The buttons must be on.
Here you go, Mac.
Aloha Kauaine. Hey, I just got a little statement here. It's about the KCR volunteers, and, you know, there's a lot of us here, and a lot of them you know because they're your friends and family, and they're people that you see at community events, donating their time to all kinds of worthy causes with their crazy schedules that they have to keep like everyone else as well. And they're people helping to make a difference on our island and in our world. And you can make a difference, too, by making your tax-deductible pledge to KKCR. And you can call right now. You know the numbers. You've heard them before. Try it out, 826-7771, 826-774. And we're all here waiting to hear from you, and you're running out of time. So we'd love to hear from you. So give it a thought, and we'll talk to you soon. Mahalo.
Awesome.
Mahalo.
Thank you, Mac. And it's true. We come in here, and we see people, you know, they're running to do their show because everybody here does have busy lives and a lot of responsibilities and commitments. And Mac, you are certainly one of those people. And it's just awesome to see people make the commitment to being here each and every week. And it's humbling to be part of an ohana that is so committed to something so just and so positive. And we got Donovan waiting for your call as well, and he's stepping up to the microphone to share some mana'o with us.
Well, I just wanted to let folks know real quick that the phone lines are open, and the phone number is 826-7771. And we have 82 new members so far during this drive. We'd love to see more new members sign up. We usually hit about 100 every drive. We like to stay within that. And real quick, big mahalo to everybody who's already become members and made pledges throughout this fun drive. And there you go. That has it. Give us a call.
Yeah.
The phone lines are manned and womaned.
Yes. Okay, well, we're going to jump back into processing our harvest. Ambient storage, what's that? What does that mean? Well, one thing I think of right off the top of my head that's perfect for ambient storage is squash. You know, we pick a squash off the vine. Paul, I know you have lots of experience with this because the food forest in its first squash harvest was so insanely abundant and so insanely delicious.
Oh, it was indeed.
So what's the most important part there? It's keeping the stem intact, yeah? Isn't that like kind of like rule number one with the squash?
Crucial. Mm-hmm. Crucial. And certainly with many fruits, leaving the stem attached. Super important. How about that? Okay.
That's better.
So sorry.
No worries.
We do have calls coming in, and you were just hearing one of our great volunteers who's answering the phone. We had her potted up there quite a bit, but super grateful for your donations. Thank you so much. And proper care, so that post-harvest handling of our fruits and vegetables, super important. And when we think about fruits that and vegetables that are not destined for the refrigerator, if they're kept in whole, in their entirety, it's really important that they do not be bruised before they go into storage. But Robin, as you were saying, there are a set of vegetables and fruits that really don't want to be in refrigeration, and we learn through trial and error sometimes what those things are and to keep them in a cool, dry, and dark location for storage.
Sure. You know, bananas are the first one that comes to mind. I think probably everybody listening has taken some bananas that looked a little too ripe and put them in the fridge. And then, you know, a day later you look and they're just totally brown. You're like, oh, God, that made it worse. Well, they get cold burn, basically. It's cold damage, and bananas don't like to be in the refrigerator. I grew up as an Italian. You never put a tomato in the refrigerator. It also, the flavors just change. It kind of ruins the flavor when they're too cold. So if it's to that point where this fruit needs to be used, use it. Do something else with it. Make gazpacho or whatever it is that brings it to another state so that it can be kept cold or chilled in some way.
Onions and garlic.
I've had, you know, with the onions that I grow here, I have to keep them in the refrigerator. I dry them really well post-harvest and try very hard to handle them really gently so they don't get bruises. Mm. Where they get bruises, guaranteed they're going to rot. And I'm on my last 10 onions, and I harvested these onions in June, and they've been in my refrigerator ever since, handled really gently. And so I'm really happy about that. That is a nice way. But there is moisture in the refrigerator, mm-hmm. and so they'll take on some moisture. It's not a long-term picture there. In fact, that's my next thing to talk about is refrigeration. It slows, but it doesn't stop the aging process. So things kind of just get less fresh every day in the refrigerator.
And is it your understanding, as we've heard, that the nutritional value of food, even in an uncooked state, when it's put in the refrigerator, goes down remarkably in the first few days after harvest? Is that true or not?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I know that I prefer to have things fresher.
Right.
The flavors are better. Yeah. And I would think that the flavonoids, which are what gives it flavor, are usually the things that are really good for us or the phytonutrients in them. So I would think that, yeah, that's going to change. And so when you go to the grocery store and you see this beautiful red bell pepper, but it says it was grown in Holland, you know, that was a long trip. It's a really long trip.
Yeah.
How much of those wonderful red pepper phytonutrients are still in there, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to also, yeah, understand that a lot of stuff, if we're not picking it ourselves or getting it from the farmer's market, it's got a lot of days since it's been picked already
right
on it before it even gets into our hands.
Yes. And on the subject of cooling, there is refrigeration, but there's also freezing, which is something I've avoided because I can't seem to get away from the freezer burn situation. Tell me what's your secret, because I know you freeze food, and I can't imagine somebody who has as refined a palate as you do is willing to put up with that freezer burn flavor.
Well, the idea is to just make sure you use it fast. I mean, I don't take any great pains. I don't have like a seal a meal or anything. I think that's pretty much the answer to freezer burn is removing the air from the package. Okay. And using seal a meal can really help. I try to just keep the stock moving a little bit more. So if I notice there's some mangoes or bananas have just been in there a little too long, that's when I make a fruit leather. And then that's something I wanted to talk about is like, so there's an energy usage for freezing. It's why I prefer drying, but I use an Excalibur, so that uses energy too. So we kind of have to weigh out these energy costs. And so if I had something that was in the freezer and then I dehydrated it, I mean, that's a really fat energy cost because it had both that it, you know, both energies that it's putting together. And I think it is wise to be conscientious of these kinds of things. I think it's a new thinking that more and more people are getting onto. Energy is not free, right, you know, at the moment. And so we want to see where we're using it and how we're using it. And I'd really like it if right now you put all your energy into your fingertip and dialed 826-7774 or 826-7771. Give us a call. Help us reach our goal of $3,000. It's quite ambitious. But last thing on freezing, and I did mention avocados when we first started talking about this. Now, avocados, they're so good for us. They're so delicious. The trees can just be so abundant. I get tired of avocados during avocado season. And then when there's no avocados around, I'm like jonesing for avocados. So I kind of found a solution. And thanks to Jennifer Murray, who wrote the Blossoming Lotus cookbooks, she gave me this recipe for avocado ice cream that I want to share, because freezing the avocado is pretty much probably the only way you can store it. You take them at their prime of ripeness, not overripe, please. And you blend them with lime zest and lime juice, more zest than juice, because you don't want it too wet, but you want that good lime flavor. And a little agave nectar or your sweetener of choice, honey, whatever it is, and a little bit of coconut butter or coconut oil. Now, I know that's a little counterintuitive because avocados are oily,
right,
but what it does, it makes it creamy instead of icy. When you eat your ice cream, the coconut oil or coconut butter will sort of emulsify it in a way that makes it more like the texture of ice cream. Mm. And I've just put it in a dish and freeze it, and we eat it like ice cream for dessert. But it also makes an amazing pie filling. If you're going to go for the raw avocado pie, mm-hmm, that lime filling. I've had the chocolate avocado a lot of times. It's really delicious, but this lime and coconut avocado combo is super good. And also guacamole can freeze pretty well. So if you know, freeze up some servings the next time you have to go to a potluck, you can easily, if you don't have anything else on hand, you can easily bring it along.
Awesome. Yes, I have had acceptable guacamole from the freezer, and it was a manufactured product as opposed to something that somebody created in their home kitchen. It really left me wondering, what is their secret?
Sure.
And I think it was, again, like you said, it was a seal-a-meal-like package that had zero oxygen in it. And then they just had the recipe right, and they had the, you know, the right amount of lemon juice and got it in at the right time. So something to work on, for sure.
No doubt. No doubt. So, you know, share your harvest, preserve your harvest, make it in such a way that you can, you know, mail it off to friends on the mainland. They love my dried herbs at home, you know. People love dried organic herbs from Kauai. It's just it's a real treat for people in other parts of the country.
Truly. And I have to throw this in because I used to keep my food in buckets when I first moved to Kauai. And the secret there is use a trash liner and change the trash liner every 6 months or so to avoid that bucket flavor that is not particularly preferred in your food, in your dried food items.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the trash liner inside the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Keeps the bugs out, too.
Yeah, definitely keeping the bugs out. I know bay leaves are another way to keep the sort of preserve the flavors of your food and keep bugs away.
And never curry powder in the bucket.
That's right. Certain things will spread around. Well, let me ask you, have you ever been inspired by something you've heard on KKCR? Maybe even on this show? I have. Whether it was a stunning musical piece or a poem or an inspired lecture, help keep that source of inspiration alive by calling us right now to pledge on our fund drive. We've got a goal of $3,000. We're working hard to make our goal and help the station make its goal, and we rely on each other. So pick up the phone, give us a call, or go to kkcr.org
Yes.
and click on the donate tab.
And as Jonathan J. said, it's going to take some OMG donors, and that would be overly manifesting givers.
Mm-hmm.
And we need some right now. We know that people can make some big moves. Heck, somebody listening to this show right now could probably close out our whole goal of $60,000 in one fell swoop. So if you, at any level, though, I made a very modest donation yesterday due to my ability at this particular time. And it felt good, even though it was a small donation. I was back in. My membership was re-upped, and I felt like I could stand side by side with the community doing my piece, not only bringing the show, but helping to contribute in the way that I could at this time. So I encourage others to follow that along, because we'd love to keep bringing you this show. And it really takes the lights on, our great staff here. We have some great the volunteer turnout has been awesome. The food has been awesome. Now, we're lucky enough here at in the Garden on the Farm to eat great weekly lunches every Wednesday of the year, thanks to a dear friend who shall remain anonymous, who brings some great food in for us. But we've had some super food donated to the show. Papayas, Pauhana Pizza, ooh, I was there for one of those. Coconut Cup, ooh, I was there for those salads, outrageous. Barracuda, the Greenery Cafe in Lihue, North Shore Grinds in Princeville, Yakadoos Bagels, Howley Girl Island Sweets, Hideaway's Pizza Pub, I had some of that pizza too, really excellent new pizza, Mediterranean Gourmet, CJ Steak and Seafood, Oasis on the Beach, Harvest Market, and probably more that are on that list. There's the food has been keeping our volunteer staff here fueled and excited. And yes, we've set an ambitious goal of $3,000 for the show to make our total goal of $60,000. But we're ambitious people. And gardeners and farmers have to be ambitious, because there's so many things that are, you know, so many obstacles to overcome to achieve that beautiful harvest of food at the end of the rainbow. And you guys are making it happen. So thank you so much. Please give us a call, 826-7771, 826-7774, and off island, 866-275-1112. It's the Fall Fun Drive, and we need your call today. Thanks.
Thank you. Now we're going to go into our Secrets of the Soil Builders segment, and we're going to talk about fermentation. But not in the way that we would for us to eat, but in the natural farming way.
Ooh, fermenting for the soil critters.
That's right. And next week we've got a great talk by expert fermentor. And so we're just kind of wetting the whistle for that, because you know, fermenting food for ourselves is so good. It's also another way to utilize our abundant harvests. But sometimes we get a little nervous about doing it, because we're not sure what we're doing. And we're worried that maybe we might get sick by eating it. Or we might make our friends or family sick if we feed it to them. And it is a very justified thought. And so I just want to plant this seed, is if you're thinking about maybe learning how to ferment food for yourself, maybe give it a try. and practice by fermenting stuff for your plants, for your garden first, and then you'll kind of get a sense for what the process is. You'll have a little more confidence when it comes to fermenting food for yourself. And like I said, if you tune in again next week, you'll get a nice primer on how to do that.
And I've been seeing people taking some sips of some of those concoctions that were made from the plants for the plants, but seem to be good for delighting the taste buds, just to make sure it came out okay.
Yeah, I think so. And if you're doing this in a clean manner, I don't think that there'd be any problem with that. So in natural farming, the what you wind up with, the product is called FPJ, fermented plant juice. And basically you want to make fermented plant juice because it's kind of like kimchi for your plants, right? And you basically take your plant material, you collect plants that have a certain kind of energy, and you pound them with an equal weight of brown sugar, and then you place a weight of some kind on that, and essentially the concentration of sugar with your plant leaves breaks open the cell walls through the osmotic pressure, and whatever plant hormones are in your plant cells of your substrate of choice are going to flow out into this liquid. And when you put the weight on there, the liquid will rise up to the top, basically, and you simply decant off this liquid, and it's basically harvesting plant hormones. Now that's the general overview, but there's different plants that we would use for different reasons, because our growing plants, our crops, they go through several cycles in their life stage. First one is initial growth. Then they go through nutritional growth, or the kind of what I call the explosion, you know, where they just like, bam, they go. Then there's a changeover period. That changeover period is a little bit subtle. That's when they're kind of starting about thinking about fruiting or going into the next cycle, reproductive cycle. So they're kind of not going green growth anymore, but they're not quite fruiting yet. That's the changeover period. Then, of course, there's the fruiting, and then there's the ripening. And so depending on which stage our crop is in, our crop of choice that we want to be applying this product to, we would choose a different substrate to make FPJ from.
And I love how the process is already requiring me to make a stronger observation, a more finely tuned observation about what stage is the plant in.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Now, I'm guilty of, I really like making all these natural farming things, and then they're all neatly on the shelf. And my plants already grow pretty good in the garden. I don't feel like I often need to use them. I'm not trying to push them too hard. So I get really into making the stuff. So maybe we should team up, Paul, because I got a lot of them.
Sounds good.
You can use them.
I'll be over with my backpack sprayer.
I'll make them.
Cool.
So there's lots of different things you could make an FPJ from, and I'll just give a quick example. This one would be for green growth, for that nutritional growth period, the explosion. And I'll draw a picture for you in our mind if you think about a banana shoot, a banana shoot. It's coming up out of the corm. It's only maybe a foot tall, maybe 18 inches tall, barely really has big leaves yet. There's just those tiny leaves. And what it is just pure growth, right? It's just
sword sucker.
A sword sucker.
Yeah.
It's growing. It's full of growth hormone or gibberellic acid. And that's what we'd want to harvest from that. And so if we would make an FPJ from that, we would use it for nutritional growth period. So we planted a fruit tree, and we're trying to get it to get big. It's too young to be fruiting yet. We would be applying an FPJ that we made from that banana shoot to a newly growing fruit tree.
Especially if we have a newly planted tree that's lagging. We know it should be having that stage of growth, but it's just kind of sitting there. Yeah?
Sure. In the plant of choice, there should be gibberellic acid already pumping through its veins. Mm-hmm. But maybe for some reason, it's not as strong. So by harvesting the gibberellic acid from the banana shoot and spraying it on the tree, we're bumping up its own concentrations of gibberellic acid can only help. Wow. Now, they like to use crop specific. So taking that gibberellic, the FPJ you made from a banana and spraying it on your banana patch would probably be its highest use. But I found that it can also work well on other plants. And bamboo shoots are used very similarly in natural farming, and those also are just full of gibberellic acid, and those, that one is a standard and well known to support the nutritional growth period of almost any plant. Mm. There are some exceptions in natural farming. Citrus is really only used on citrus. You wouldn't use it on other plants. It's kind of very specific.
Well, you're probably through that osmotic action pulling out not only the hormones, but all kinds of phytonutrients that might, or anti-nutrients that might negatively affect a plant that isn't in the same family.
That's right. And so that's known as crop specific. And so we don't only make FPJs out of growing tips or growing shoots. We would make that, we could make an FPJ out of fruit.
Yes.
Actual, like, fallen, unmarketable fruit, fruits that's a little rotten already, not going to eat it, can't eat it.
It's not like the marketable fruit, like, is provided by Kauai Coconut. And Natalie Ermitska just gave us a donation, and she wants to donate a gallon of coconut water to the next person who calls and donates.
Woohoo!
So an added bonus from one of our great friends and listeners. Natalie, thank you so much for your donation and for, oh, that gallon of coconut water.
That's going to be awesome. A lucky caller right there. If I weren't talking, I'd be calling. So you can take fruits that are unmarketable and rotting and make an FPJ with them. Believe it or not, you would take a fruit, smash it up in a bucket with an equal weight of brown sugar. You could get the liquid off and then spray it on a tree that's ripening fruit. Because, again, that tree is already producing the same hormones for fruit ripening. And then you're adding more. You're bumping it up. You're bumping up its own production. Now, I like to think, this is just speculation and purely my own opinion, but I like to think that by delivering these plant hormones in a sugary solution, that you're making the plant so happy, because the plant spends most of its day trying to make sugar out of sunlight and water. And so if you're giving it this hormone in a sugary form, it's just like candy to the plant. They're like, yes, of course it wants to take the sugar in. And so it's going to be getting the hormone. Again, that's just my speculation, probably anthropomorphizing just a little bit there, but forgive me. at any rate, as I read about that for fruit ripening in natural farming, they do say that it will make spots on your fruits if you spray that. So if you are a commercial farmer who's selling, it will damage the appearance of your fruit, although it will improve the flavor of your fruit. It could damage the appearance of your fruit. So just that one caveat there. I wouldn't want someone to, you know, go out there and spray stuff and then be unhappy with it. But fermentation for your plants is a whole new realm. And although new realm to us, it's actually an ancient practice throughout Asia. Farmers of 40 Centuries, a really great book that I read recently, still working my way through it, actually written in the 1920s. And so many of the principles that we learn about now through our natural farming courses and here in Hawaii are principles that have been used for thousands of years throughout Asia.
And showing great applicability here in the Hawaiian Islands. And thanks so much to Master Cho for coming and sharing the wisdom, and to all the great people here on Kauai and throughout the state who have taken on that sage advice and wisdom and practices and even adapted them to Hawaii. And if you want to learn more, there's a great event happening tonight, the Hawaii Farmers Union United Monthly Potluck Meeting. It's tonight, Wednesday, October 14th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. at the Anahola Clubhouse. Some of the highlights, making and using organic insecticides by Ray Mackey, which I believe is also a Korean natural farming technique.
Yeah, I believe it's an FPJ. It's basically what we were just talking about.
Awesome.
Yeah, very cool.
And then also a report on the Korean natural farming IMO pig and cow projects being considered by farmers in the Molawa'a area, and there was a Korean Natural Farming Symposium on Hawaii Island just about a week ago that Jenny, who was on our show, and Ned, who was on our show a few months ago, attended, and they're going to give a report. Also, Sandy, and I'm going to say her last name wrong, so I'll just leave it at Sandy, who is the, I believe she's the director of the Agribusiness Development Corporation, is going to be talking at the Farmers Union meeting as well about lands that are coming up available to experienced farmers, a minimum of 5 acres at Kalepa Ridge, as well as up in Koke'e. So all of that at the Farmers Union meeting tonight, 6 to 8:30 p.m. So a few more announcements. Malama Kauai's Chills and Thrills Kauai School Garden Network fundraiser. Sounds super fun. Sunday, October 18th, 4 to 9 p.m. at the Kauai Beer Company in Lihue. There'll be canoe plant themed poo-poos, a costume contest, music game, silent auction, and advanced registration is required for that fundraiser at the Kauai Beer Company. I hear those fundraisers are really fun that are held at that particular establishment. You can get more information at malamakauai.org or by calling 828-0685 extension 12. And keep in mind, ticket sales end this Thursday at midnight. Very scary. Also, the Kauai Coffee and Chocolate Festival is coming up Friday and Saturday, October 23rd and 24th, and it's going to be in beautiful, historic Hanapepe, and there'll be small group workshops by Kauai Coffee, chocolate and coffee tasting, taiko drummers, a massage station. You know, it's going to be one of those great festival-like things that we love to do and get together and do all together here on Kauai. For more information, you can go to KauaiChocolateAndCoffeeFestival.com or call Tiffany at 225-3917. Want to let you know, too, a new restaurant opening up in Kapa'a called Hanai. It's going to be at the former Kojima store location in North Kapa'a. They're having a meet-and-greet this Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. to invite farmers to check out the new venue and hopefully get vendors to sign up. So they're looking to make connections with our local farmers. Super cool. Sounds like a great project there. If you want to have your ag-related event or announcement shared on air, please email it a couple of weeks in advance to inthegardenonthefarm@gmail.com. To hear previous broadcasts of the show, go to kkcr.org, click the audio archive at the top of the page. And we would like to thank so much the other members of the In the Garden on the Farm team right here in the studio, Mac, who helps us out with the phones each and every week, Dean, our volunteer coordinator, and I'm sorry, Dove, our volunteer coordinator, Dean, our station manager. He also acts as our engineer from time to time. Our webmaster, Laura Christine, and gosh, everybody else here. And Robin's going to give a super big thanks to all of our callers for the show and everybody who donated on the show today.
No kidding. Gosh, it's a long, long list, too. So I want to thank from our hearts Judy, Marshall, Natalie, Colin, Lucy, Nanette, Matt, Deborah, Patricia, Laura, Uncle Lindsay, Chris, Baba, Gabrielle and Rob, Danny, Karen, Laurel, Hikari, Harvest, two Johns, John from Princeville and John from Kapa'a, Buffy, and Sally.
Wow.
Thank you guys so much.
Wow.
We really appreciate you.
I think that's the most number of support we've seen so far, and so many of those first names just brought you guys to mind, and I just send you so much love and appreciation for supporting us so we can support the station.
Yeah, thanks you guys. You really help us keep going. We appreciate you a lot.
Indeed. So please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. This has been In the Garden on the Farm. Thanks so much, everyone.
Aloha.
Aloha. And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. Please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations. And